Good afternoon, and welcome to Who's in the Kitchen. You're listening to WDRT 91.9 FM Community Radio from the ground up from Viroqua, Wisconsin, which is located in the Driftless area of southwestern Wisconsin. This is a show about food and health and diet and has kind of transformed into a show on the last Saturday of the month, Digging Deep, which is a show about farming. But today we're going to be talking with someone who's involved in the dietary field, and that's my friend Laura Poe. Welcome, Laura.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Laura has, I should say, she's married, so she's now Laura Poe Mathis. And Laura and I have really known each other for many years, and she moved out here from, I think, Kansas City, right?
That's where I'm from. Yeah, I moved here from Portland, Oregon, but originally from Kansas City.
Right. But she found the Driftless area, and I just wanted to go over a little bit about what we first start talking about when I met Laura, because you were a trained dietitian, like a dietitian in a hospital kind of setting.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so talk about that and your journey to where you are now.
Sure. Yeah. It's been a meandering one for sure. I have been a dietitian for 15 years this year, and I started in the hospital setting, which most dietitians do just per their training, started in a clinical setting in hospitals for a while, and really quickly found that that wasn't my jam. There was things I loved about it, of course, and not like I would maybe never do it again, but it wasn't for me. I really was seeing that I wanted to kind of help people proactively in more of the preventative nutrition side of things. I, you know, in the hospital, by the time they saw me, they were already so far down the path, it's so hard to help people. I wanted to be able to intervene much sooner in the disease process.
Oh, or,
you know,
I see.
You know, I wanted to talk to people about how to stay healthy and have a lifestyle that supports good health instead of, oh, one thing that stood out was, you know, I was doing some nutrition counseling in the hospital with someone who had just gotten a foot amputated from diabetes. And I was just like, I've got to be able to get to people before this stage. And those people
horrible.
Need help too. And there's, you know, no shame in that. But it's like my heart was really in preventative care. And so, and starting with food, you know, that's of course how you and I have probably connected so much is, I saw that helping people learn how to cook and eat well, was the way to do it. And not just knowing what to do, but, teaching them how to do it. 'Cause there's a lot of information out there, but how to actually put it into practice.
Right. Right. Well, you know, it seems to me, I might be off on the timeline, but it seems like 15 years ago was kind of when there were other people kind of coming to the conclusion that there was not enough nutrition education in doctors.
Mm-hmm.
And so that medicine had not really been including food and digestion and things like that in the picture of helping someone, you know, to get well. And the word functional medicine, I know I just ran across that and I thought, yeah, this is more holistic. And I think that's what you got drawn to too,
mm-hmm.
is you started retraining yourself outside of the dietitian sort of way of looking at eating and, you know.
Very much so,
and
yeah.
So who did you find, who inspired you, and did you get more training?
I definitely did a lot of self-study. I took some other courses and workshops and went to a lot of conferences and just tried to absorb and consume as much information as I could after graduation, after already being a dietitian and doing all that work. I tried to sift through so many different sources and viewpoints, and, you know, there's so much out there. And you're right, it was kind of around when the functional medicine, functional nutrition world was just kind of getting going. And so there certainly wasn't as much as there is now, but that's when it all started. And I had been, you know, in college even starting to get into the organic food world and in college and a few years after, I was vegan and, you know, just starting my journey of figuring out what is good for our bodies to eat.
Oh, so you're experimenting on yourself.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. I have tried every single diet you could probably think of. There's many I wouldn't recommend, but certainly trying them all is the best way to find that out. But I was certainly in the world of, like, looking to a more holistic viewpoint for supporting health. And so sifting through all these different sources, I would say over the journey, there was many different influences. But the thing that the turning point probably that got me to from being vegan into a little bit clearer path to closer to where I am now was finding things like the Weston Price Foundation.
Weston Price.
Mm-hmm. So he mm-hmm. was a, this is a, it's a nonprofit organization, but there's a, it was kind of inspired by a man who was a dentist in the early 20th century. His name was Weston A. Price, out of Ohio. And he essentially was one of the first people to connect dental health with nutrition. He had started to see cavities and things like that he never saw before. He's like, people never had cavities or needed braces or anything in my practice for my whole career. And all of a sudden, there's this huge turn with the advent of processed foods and those types of things. So he traveled all over the world, and which at that time was remarkable and not easy. And to remote societies, and even at that time there were far more intact indigenous cultures than there are now, that were not modernized at all, so had never met a modernized person before. So he was studying their diets compared to modernized diets, even of those same people's relatives. So what he was really trying to disprove was the notion that these things were genetic, and that he wanted to prove that they were nutrition and lifestyle related. So he was comparing the nutrition of people who were in the same family who had wildly different dental health. And what he also found was the differences in other types of health. So at that time, tuberculosis was becoming quite an issue, and the people who he studied who had the indigenous diet. So by that I mean the people who were eating traditional foods that had not been processed or modernized in any way, that they had been eating for thousands and thousands mm-hmm. and thousands of mm-hmm. years, those people not only had good protection against cavities and needing like braces or things like that, but also had good protection against tuberculosis. So,
good grief, I did not know that.
So they had good immune systems. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so it started as this journey into dental health, but he found much more. And he took some of their foods back to his lab in the States and was analyzing the nutritional content. So all that kind of culminated in this big following of his work. And in
they came out in a book.
Yep.
Called Nourishing Traditions.
Well, his book was called Nutrition and Physical Degeneration,
right,
which was published. It is more science-y
right.
work. But then the foundation that started the Weston A. Price Foundation was this nonprofit that their goal is to kind of get out this information, and their tagline is to promote food farming and the healing arts, wise traditions and the food farming and healing arts. So kind of this, the whole point was to look to our ancestors, their traditional foods, their traditional farming practices. I know you've been talking about that. Their traditional health care practices and medicines and lifestyles, really movement, everything too, that has promoted good health and especially preventing chronic disease. Certainly mm-hmm. people in our ancestors had lots of things that happened to them health-wise, but chronic disease wasn't one of them, and we have the ability right. now to prevent lots of the other things that they encountered.
Right. So,
you know,
say what are some of the basic themes? And one would be organic. I mean, not grown with herbicides and pesticides. That would be one.
Certainly.
And maybe they didn't emphasize that, but
yeah.
you know,
how? No, definitely.
But
how foods are grown?
Growing, you mm-hmm. know, just didn't involve the chemical industry.
Yes, because if especially with, you know, plant foods, if a food is not grown in soil that is rich in nutrients, it will not, that food will not be rich in nutrients.
That's
so,
something we're beginning to realize.
Yeah.
You know, soil isn't just, I mean, you know, just
it's not
powder
inert.
That you add water to and things grow.
Right.
There's nutrients there. And then another theme that, you know, really impressed me from that book was just, you know, processed foods.
Yeah.
And in the margins, you know, they have guessing games of what do you think this is, a granola bar or whatever, you know, and it was like 900 ingredients that you can't pronounce, and you go, oh, that's a granola bar.
Yeah, so that's in the book Nourishing Traditions, which is the cookbook by Sally Fallon, which is kind of, it took the principles that Weston Price found in his studies, and this was then written in the 80s by her, and took all that knowledge and put it into a cookbook so people knew not just what to do, but how to do it.
How to do it.
So there's lots of fun information there about the ultra processed foods that we're trying to avoid. So that would be a theme in this kind of world of ancestral nutrition or traditional foods.
And then my mind is racing. How did they preserve foods? And if you didn't have refrigeration, how did traditional people preserve foods?
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, different from everything being canned.
Yes. So they would, before canning and refrigeration and all that, depends on where you live. You know, certainly if you were in the Arctic, you would have frozen a lot of things. But drying, smoking, curing, those types of things were in every culture. And then fermenting is probably the one that became the most well-known from the Weston Price Foundation, is fermentation is a big thing.
And I know that really grabbed you, because you've really been teaching us how to ferment, something I didn't know anything about before I met you.
Oh, yeah, how nice. yes, that certainly did grab me. That's a great way to put it, because it was a big leap to go from being vegan to looking at more of a traditional diet, which has lots of animal foods in it, and that that leap was made less dramatic, I suppose you could say, because of the emphasis on fermented foods in the Weston Price Foundation. Because I was already doing a lot of fermentation and eating fermented foods when I was vegan, and when I found their information and they were so into fermentation, I was like, well, they must know what they're talking about. So that really grabbed me, and just the story to that of studying our ancestors really grabbed me. That no one he studied had a fully plant-based diet. No traditional culture was fully plant-based.
That's kind of a myth, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, our ancestors just ate berries and what? I mean, nuts?
Yeah, and that, that's not
No, true. That's not really, that's not really accurate.
Yeah, not our human ancestors,
not for all
no.
So, right.
There were certainly cultures he studied that had more plants, but none of them were devoid of animal foods.
Oh.
And even in, say, India or something, where vegetarianism is part of the even religious practice, they weren't vegan. They still ate quite a bit of dairy and eggs. So that's what he found. So the fermentation was certainly the connection that I had between those two worlds, and that's something very much promoted by that kind of that foundation and that way of eating, but also has become, for me, one of my biggest passions and the thing I probably teach the most and talk about the most, because throughout the years of my practice, kind of going back to that I started in the hospital, my practice has, now that I'm in private practice, has really evolved to focusing on gut health. And so that's, being really in love with fermented foods is kind of how I got there. I liked the foods first and then learned more about the gut health. So,
Well, that's good, because just focusing on gut health might sound like, oh, that sounds dreary. What kind of a diet am I going to have? But you come from a person who loves to cook and who tried all kinds of diets. And it's not like it's grim and all medicinal and everything. It's really can be an adventure into food and preservation and things like that that you didn't know about before.
Yeah.
And just look at we have this company in Viroqua called Physiology, which is we have a variety of fermented foods that are available. And they're alive.
Yes.
That's the thing that is fascinating, you know. So you could buy sauerkraut in a can, but it's been heated.
Yeah.
And so it's killed the enzymes, right?
And the bacteria.
And
yeah,
the bacteria.
The probiotic bacteria.
You do want to have live fermented foods, and that's a challenge. I mean, how you keep them, package them, and so forth, and
certainly
ship them around the country and that sort of thing.
But that's why I promote making your own, because that cuts out all that transportation, and it's easy to do. And again, that's kind of where my journey has got me, is not just telling people what to do, but how to do it, because information is a dime a dozen on the internet. But it's like, yeah, but how do I make that? So that's when, you know, getting into teaching workshops and hands-on things. And
So I'm really fast forward, because we could talk the whole hour just about your journey and what has influenced you. But some of the experiences that you've had along this life's journey is getting more oriented toward a business that you started, which is really, you know, personal counseling.
Yeah.
Not even just a course.
Yeah.
Or something like that, but actually, you know, people coming to you and asking, you know, why am I so sick? Why do I have rashes? Why do I have this and that, you know? And so many things along the way. I know you have probably studied a lot of other things and met lots of interesting people, and I'd love to document all that. But I'm thinking, well, you did work, you've been teaching at Youth New Chef High School, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Teaching nutrition there. Mm-hmm.
So teaching nutrition to the students there, which was kind of a course already started by Jane Seaman many years ago.
Yes.
To really make food, knowledge of food, how it's grown and how to prepare it and how to make wonderful dishes and be healthy. And Jane herself had a course sort of self-published, but it's just, you know, really complete. And then I think you worked at the food co-op here in the...
Yes, when I first moved here.
Nutrition section.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when I first moved here, I was getting my practice going, worked there,
and
which was great for meeting people. You meet everybody there.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, wonderful. And so just being in this field, you just keep meeting people, I'm sure. And then you've also taught at the folk school here.
Yeah, I teach workshops.
Fermentation mainly?
Fermentation of all different types. I've taught some other things with them, but... including like how to cook different organ meats and those types of things, and sourdough bread, and which is a form of fermentation. But I've really mostly been focusing on just the other types of fermentation the last few years. And I'm on the board of the folk school too. So
on the board of what?
The folk school. So I know it's a great, the Driftless Folk School is awesome organization.
It's amazing. Yeah. I think the folk school is just something to really brag about. They have a beautiful brochure. And I've looked into other folk schools, and I just think the one here, is it called the Driftless Folk School? I think it's one of the outstanding folk schools of the country, really. So many wonderful teachers who come and have joined and been on the staff. And so I'm talking with Laura Poe Mathis. You might have figured out who this is I'm talking to. You might have even been to one of her courses at the folk school, or had one of your children maybe be in her class and in that youth initiative, or dealt with her at the food co-op. And so you're listening to Who's in the Kitchen. I'm Philothea Beeson, and you're listening to 91.9 FM coming from Viroqua, Wisconsin, and streaming live on the internet at WDRT.org. We have podcasts of previous shows in our archives. You can go to Who's in the Kitchen, WDRT.org, and you could look at previous shows. And if you like this show and you want to, didn't take notes or something like that, and you want to go back and listen, you can just go online and listen. So I do want to get into what you're doing now and what you and the course that you're writing. And I guess that grew out of partially working on yourself.
Of course.
Learning on yourself. And then having this counseling service, which is, what is it called? What's the name of it?
My practice.
Coaching, kind of?
Yeah, I mean, the business is Viroqua Nutrition Counseling, but if someone, it's just a private practice,
This is a private practice, and a person could contact Laura if you're interested in more and you really do have a health problem that you feel like is not being addressed by the conventional wisdom that you've found so far. So Laura has this food counseling service, coaching, I guess you could say. And so then this led, and I'm sure teaching kids and teaching people at the folk school kind of led to, I don't need to write this down. I need to kind of make a course out of it.
Yeah, certainly. Especially because so many of the people I have seen in my practice have very similar problems. Of course, my kind of niche is digestive health, so many people are coming for the same reasons. But I saw a lot of similar patterns and themes in terms of the root causes of how people were getting to me and what kinds of things they needed, what kind of interventions they needed in terms of how to get better. So really seeing these things repeated over years and years and years led me to kind of see that I could help a larger number of people because I only have so many hours that I can see people. I could reach people who are farther away, and kind of it would help everyone to streamline this and make an online course so that before even coming to me one-on-one, they could kind of go through this course, which are the similar steps I would tell everyone meeting with one-on-one, but they could go through this at their own pace. And it could also save people money too, because they're, you know, with less one-on-one access to me, it could, you know, it's at a lower price. So there's a lot of benefits to this, but especially for me being able to reach more people with my limited time.
Right.
So it's an online course that is at your own pace, which is nice. You know, people are busy, and it's seven modules essentially. So I take people through basically what I think of as seven different areas to address when looking to fix their gut health.
So, great. I'm dying to get right down to it. So, share these seven modules with us.
So the course is called Rest, Digest, and Heal, because what I really gleaned from my years of working with people with gut health issues was really that the nervous system and stress was the one of the primary root causes of everyone's dysfunction.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. And stress is a big word, and it can mean a lot of different things, but to me, one of the main root causes were either emotional and kind of psychological stressors, whether it be trauma, like a history of trauma, anxiety, kind of type A personality, any of these types of things where your nervous system really gets dysregulated and not in balance, where you can't really keep your body calm, which kind of helps with naming the course, the Rest, Digest, and Heal, because your body has, to simplify it, the body has kind of a nervous system that operates in two modes. It's your rest and digest, so where your body is at rest, it can send energy and blood and everything it needs to the digestive system to make it work well. That's when we also have the best reproductive health, the best sleep, all these different things. That's when your body can heal. You have the other kind of mode you can be in, which is that fight or flight, which maybe we've heard of. If someone's really stressed out, you get into fight or flight mode. That's where that nervous system is kind of activated, and your body sends its energy to its muscles, to the heart. So if you were, you know, evolutionarily, biologically, this would be used for if we were running from a predator or you know, something like that, an attacker or something like that. So your body says, go. But in our modern world, we are under stress a lot more than we actually need to be for survival. So we have a lot of psychological stress in our body. The nervous system doesn't really differentiate between something that is a perceived threat and something that's a real threat, you know? So our having anxiety around any number of things.
access, money, politics,
sure, yes,
kids.
Things that we even have no control over or that don't really affect us. So our body reacts the same to that as if we're running from a lion, you know. The nervous system sends out the same hormones.
Yeah, that's interesting. The fight or flight, neither one of those are rest.
Yes. Yeah. Or some people freeze. But anyway, all of those are your body cannot digest well. It cannot heal if you're always in that mode or if you're in that mode a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So that's a lot of what this course is about, is not, it's not just focused on what to eat. There's certainly, we talk about food, but a lot of it is about regulating the nervous system, how to get yourself in that rest and digest mode more often, so that not only can your body heal, but then from whatever has been going on, but also then you can digest your food properly and you won't keep having these things keep coming back. Because what I've seen so much in my practice, and the people I really like to work with, are people who have done many different diets. They've tried going gluten-free, they've tried this or that thing and not gotten better. And the reason for that is that food is not the only thing going on with the gut. Certainly food is a big part of it. That's what the gut is doing, digesting.
Uh-huh.
But so, you could eat a perfect diet and have totally terrible gut health if you're a stress ball, if you have a history of trauma that's unresolved, if you are a perfectionist, if you are not getting enough sleep, if you're, you know, sedentary or over-exercising, or, you know, there's all these different things that a perfect diet will not fix. And
so what kinds of rest, what falls into the area of rest recommendations?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things is not just rest, but also just how to reduce stressors in your life. And there's physical stressors and emotional stressors. And that's kind of the purpose of this course, is to remove these things that are barriers to healing. Because it's, you know, like I said, lots of people are doing things great, but there's still all these barriers to healing in the way. But certainly proper rest is one of them. And pardon me, the things that get your body into rest and digest mode out of that activated nervous system would be things like going outside more often, connecting with community more often, having a spiritual practice. You know, these things that in the research certainly are shown to improve healing and reduce nervous system kind of dysregulation.
Breathing.
Breath work is a big part of it.
Yeah.
How we eat. So we talk, there's certainly a whole module on which traditional foods are healing for the gut. There's not an emphasis in this course on what not to eat. It's a small fraction, because it's really, I just don't see that helping people that often with super strict elimination diets. I've really just never seen anybody fully heal and never have to come back to me on
if they haven't dealt with all these other aspects.
Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. But so we talk about, like, you know, the nourishing foods, like fermented foods and bone broths and organ meats and, you know, properly prepared grains and all these things. But we also talk about how to eat. We're not, you know, if you're eating in a rush all the time, if you're not chewing your food properly, if you're eating alone in front of your phone and scrolling all the time, your body will not be able to digest properly. So there's lots of different aspects to look at. But with the main lens is, you know, I help people to remove their barriers to healing and figure out what stressors they can start to manage so that their gut can heal. Because your body will heal on its own. That's its job. But we have so many barriers in the way that we can't, it can't do its job. And connection is a big part of it, is what I talk about.
Mm-hmm.
I see a lot of people who, with good intentions towards better health, start to isolate more and more around all sorts of different things, including food. It makes sense. You learn about ultra processed foods and you learn about kind of the modern food system and farming practices and all these things. And you get overwhelmed and you say, I'm going to get rid of everything and eat really perfectly and I'm going to get healthier. Perfectly normal reaction. I did it. I've done it multiple times. But what we don't see is the other pieces of the puzzle there. And what that can do to you with being too rigid. And then you can never go to your family's house to eat. You can never go out to eat. You just are eating by yourself because no one else is doing it right. And I have been there. I've done that. But
that's a stressor right there,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
Eating alone is a bit. Am I going to be able to eat anything?
Yeah.
Oh. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just being overwhelmed with reading labels and what to cook and all these things. And that's a piece I really hope to solve for people is not having to have Google be your doctor, is not having to sift through all the information on the internet and be like, I don't know what's right to do. There's 100 different diets I'm reading about. They all say they're going to fix my gut. I don't know which one's right because a lot of them are conflicting. Mm-hmm. So trying to streamline, sift out what I have, you know, seen work in people over the mm-hmm. 15 years I've been practicing and make things simpler because mm-hmm. it's so hard. It's so hard for people.
So the actual food, the choices of food, what are some guidelines that you have that say, what are some barriers that you really do want to avoid? I know you don't want to get into getting too paranoid about things, mm-hmm. but are there some general guidelines? I mean, like try to buy organic, for instance.
Sure.
The fewer ingredients or less processed, or you know, are there some guidelines?
Certainly, yeah. And none of it's prescriptive, meaning there's no diet that anyone has to follow in this program. There are foods that I recommend that are better for healing, and foods like, you know, I'll mention here that really do create a barrier to healing because of their effect on the body. But it's not mm-hmm. prescriptive. It's not like, oh, you ate something processed and now you have to start all over. It's nothing. There's right. no, you know, there's not a diet at all. It's a process of learning. But, you know, the foods we talk about specifically in the traditional foods module that do create more barriers to healing would be things like you mentioned, ultra processed foods, which are just foods that have gone that really were born in a factory that have so many of their ingredients not connected to their original source that they no longer resemble a food that came from an animal or plant. Mm-hmm. So removing those is really important and takes time, and that's something I mm-hmm. I really have seen. Is I don't expect people to do a pantry clean out where they just go in and throw everything away. And some people need that, different personalities.
I was just going to say, pantry clean out.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be extreme.
Yeah. And then you can, some people, depending on how you function, could really be frozen by that. It's like, well, now what do I do? I've been eating this way my whole life. I can't just, if I throw everything out, I'm just going to be totally overwhelmed. So reducing overwhelm is important. This can be a transition. It can be a transition to eating healthier. It can be a gradual process. You know, the more you get rid of those things, the faster you'll probably heal. But some people, you know, just saying, okay, here's the perfect diet, eat this. It's like, I don't know how to cook. I don't know where to buy these things. I don't know how to interpret mm-hmm. labels. So educating, you know, on how to do this gradually can really be helpful for reducing stress.
Well, there was a guy, his name is Bobby. He had a little, these little, I don't know if they're YouTubes or the different social media mm-hmm. outlets, but he would go through the grocery store and pick out, you know, foods on the shelf, mainly processed foods. Mm. And he'd read the labels and he'd kind of tell you what the different things were. And it's like 1 minute, I mean, maybe even 30 seconds. Mm. Maybe three different kinds of ketchup or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much from him. And he'd say, you know, you can choose one that is more healthy. And these are the kind of things you do want to avoid, like preservatives, mm-hmm. Which I hadn't really realized, but a friend of mine who was Linda was on my show many years ago, Linda Bond, mm-hmm. and did some foods on nutrition, and she said, you know, when you have preservatives, it's to keep a food from actually digesting, basically, to keep it on the shelf. Mm-hmm. And so when you have a food that really can be kept forever, it probably isn't, in a way, it isn't really food because the whole idea of food is to break down, right?
Right, yeah.
And so, you know, at first you would think, well, preservatives, what does that mean? You know, but then you go, oh, gosh, well, maybe I'll look for, you know, foods that don't have preservatives. And what were some, well, of course, sugar.
Yeah, I'm not anti-sugar. I think there's different sources of sugar, and there are some that are ultra processed and some that are not.
I mean, most naturally, the closer to foods naturally.
Yeah,
probably
so things
that's
like,
okay kind of sugar.
Yeah,
right?
Like honey, maple syrup, sucanat, which is the completely unrefined cane sugar. Cane sugar was a very traditional food. It's not a modern food necessarily. Although
it's just that we eat so much more of it, right?
Yeah, and I mean, the big problem with over-consuming sugar is really, to me, that it displaces more nutrient-dense foods. That's really the main issue with it for me, is you can only eat so much food, right, in a day, and if you're eating these foods that really don't have any nutrients in them, where is your body going to get the nutrients? Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're eating just things that are ultra-processed, like high fructose corn syrup, you know, talking about sweeteners, so high fructose corn syrup or even artificial sweeteners like aspartame and Splenda and things that don't have any nutrition in them, it's, you have to get it from somewhere. So you're not going to get what you need to support, you know, vital health and healing. So, yeah, so the ultra-processed foods are kind of a double whammy, a lot of them. Not only do they, a lot of them cause inflammation, so things like hydrogenated oils and artificial preservatives. I like to say artificial preservatives because salt is a preservative and we very much need salt in the diet.
Food coloring. I know
food
that
coloring,
does
yep.
really, if, I don't really even know what goes into food coloring and why it's
Well, they
a
don't
problem.
Have to tell you. That's part of it.
A lot of kids really react to food coloring
yes.
and you know, affects their behavior and
yeah.
their digestion.
Yeah, and that's been in the news a lot with the Kellogg's boycott. So there's been a huge uproar about the use of food coloring in Kellogg's, specifically their cereals.
Cereals.
And that parents kind of got together on social media, really. It got fueled by connections on social media to try to get them to remove the food colorings from the artificial dyes, specifically from their products, which they said they were going to do many years ago. And they said, well, we need years to change the recipe, which makes sense. It's a big company. But they never did it. And they're kind of like, well, we're probably not going to do it. And but the thing about them is the products they make to sell in other countries don't contain those ingredients because you can't sell them in Europe. And they find a way to do it with other ingredients. But here they're like, they know that we'll eat it and really not care. So, and food dyes, some kids react to those with many different symptoms. And it's hard to know who the onus is on. Is it on the parents to not eat those, to not serve them to the kids? Is it on the company to not make them? Depends on how you view things, but certainly we gotta somehow stop getting all these ultra processed foods in kids. So you know, a lot of the things I see in my practice are people who have these digestive issues. They didn't just start in the last year. It's been since childhood. It's been since, and maybe you didn't have the symptoms in childhood, but the culmination of poor health started in utero for a lot of people. You know, what you are made of, your health starts when you're in the womb with what your mother eats and her health and her stress and her toxic load. So what chemicals she's ingesting. And so if we grew up in our modern world, you know, basically anyone who grew up after the 50s when really the processed foods really boomed in our country, if you grew up after then, you've been just gradually having more and more of these foods. And it's no wonder that you get to your 30s and you're like, I have IBS, I have Crohn's, I have diabetes, I'm obese, all these things. Because since day one of conception, you have not been getting the nutrition you needed and have been bombarded with chemicals that are not really meant to be in the human body. So, and stressors and, you know, all from so many different things. So it's like, it's no wonder how we got here. It's not just like, oh, sometimes I go out to eat. It's like, it's been a
it's
lifetime.
Not just that meal.
Yeah. And, yes. And right. So that's really what I'm starting to really focus on. It's like, how can we unwind everything that's happened? And it takes a long time. It's not going to take 30 days. You know, it's gonna take months or years. Right.
Oh, that's interesting.
That's okay.
Yeah, I'm talking with Laura Poe Mathis, who is what do you call yourself?
A registered dietitian.
A registered dietitian who has gotten into individual counseling, a mother among other practices, but working with people who are having, health issues, dietary issues, digestive issues. But she's also taught groups of people in many, many situations in school and folk school and conferences and things like that. And you're listening to Who's in the Kitchen. Laura's definitely in the kitchen, and she'll probably have some specific things to tell us how to fix that'll make us feel better. We're coming from Viroqua, Wisconsin, 91.9 FM, and you can go to our archives and listen to this show or previous shows at WDRT.org. So I'm going to get back to Laura. We have a few more minutes, and so you had three components to your course, which is rest, digest,
and heal.
Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of pretty much on the digestion, I guess, and the heal. Let's go back to what people come to you with. You mentioned type 2 diabetes, Crohn's, and just a lot of people are getting IBS and things like that that we just never really heard of before. What are some of the other ailments that people have? Or
I would say the primary thing that people come to me with is IBS, so that's irritable bowel syndrome, which is, you know, one of those diagnoses that doctors will give to patients who have a group of symptoms that have no clear other diagnosable kind of cause. So so the symptoms are really what give you the diagnosis. So things like, depending on what form you have, diarrhea or constipation, pain in, abdominal pain, bloating, distension, those types of things. But usually having either constipation or diarrhea or a combination of both. So that's a very common one. The other probably most common thing I see are more the upper GI things like GERD, so acid reflux, heartburn, those types of things. I see a lot of that. But other things would along the digestive line would be, Crohn's and colitis, celiac, and then overgrowth of different bacteria, having overgrowth of maybe candida or, and those are yeast, but SIBO, so small intestinal bacterial overgrowth, those types of things. So,
and how about skin? Skin diseases.
Eczema would be a big one.
Which you might not think about as dietary problems.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or what do you call it? Autoimmune diseases.
Yeah, it can be. Yeah, there can be lots of different things that cause eczema or other skin rashes. Certainly, some people have more of the contact dermatitis with that. So, from maybe like a laundry soap that your skin doesn't agree with, or a fabric or something like that, but most of them would be gut health and nutrition related.
Oh, really?
For sure.
Interesting.
So, and those would be probably the primary things I see, but certainly people come for other things, weight loss or whatever, but I certainly promote myself as gut health focused, but everything really is related to the gut to me. So if there's obesity, it can often be gut related.
So the healing part of it, do you actually see people get results from making changes?
I do, yes.
Oh, isn't that exciting?
It is exciting. I love it. And it started on myself. I really came to the conclusion I have come to now, not just with working with other people, but on myself, because a lot of my health issues that I came up against were after I was already a dietitian, were after I didn't, have many health problems when I was younger, but, as a dietitian who was always looking to learn more and, improve my diet and do better as I knew better, I became quite perfectionistic and, kind of like we were talking about, and had a very restricted, diet, and was doing I'm eating perfectly. I'm like paleo, no sugar, no grains, blah, blah, blah. And my health got worse and worse and worse. And as a result of that, as a result of perfectionism, as a result of stress, and I found the more the more I took out of my diet, the more perfect I tried to make my diet be, the worse my health was.
Isn't that interesting yeah. that focusing too much on the diet yeah. brought on stress?
Yeah, which and especially taking things out, taking out whole groups of foods that are perfectly nutritious just because some blog told me to do it or some book or, you know, whatever. So the experiment really started on myself with focusing on what is missing, focusing on stress and the nervous system, using herbs to support my body in healing, but not looking to them as prescriptions. Like supplements and herbs are great, but they're not, they don't treat the root cause. They help support you as your body heals, but that's not the root cause, you know? So figuring out what my root cause was, because everyone's is different. They usually fall under the three categories of imbalanced microbiome, deficiency in nutrients, or stressors. Those are kind of the three. It's usually a combination. But as I started to address those, I started to get so much healthier and so much better and happier. My labs were better. My weight was more balanced. My sleep was better. My skin was better. All these things. My digestion was better. And so I know it can work on myself. And then I was able to really pass that on to my clients who I changed my approach with. Instead of being like, oh, you need to follow a Whole30 or some other really restrictive diet, it's like, oh, you need to figure out what's wrong in your, like, in your heart and in your nervous system, and focus on all these things that will actually help you heal when you eat really healthy foods so that they can do their jobs. So I've seen it work in people, and it started with myself.
Oh, that's really great.
Yeah.
So just in our last few minutes, what are some of the just major things that you think are just really, really healthy and you hope people will bring into their practice?
That's a good question. Certainly, I would say a balance of animal and plant foods, not just doing one or the other, but a balance of both. And with our animal foods, eating nose to tail. So including things like, especially if you're on a gut healing journey, including the broths broths and stocks and, you know, making soups and things like that.
Now, why is
non-negotiable.
That? Why
so
is that?
The things like broth, it doesn't have to just be from bones. So it could be bone broth, but it could be made from a whole chicken or a roast or any of those where you get that nice gelatin-rich broth. Has components like glutamine, which is an amino acid that helps kind of heal and seal the gut. So if there's things like leaky gut, it helps with the healing there. It helps lower inflammation.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. It's one of the primary foods to have on a gut healing diet. And it's, to me, it's more important to focus on getting enough of that or getting enough protein, getting enough, you know, which your body has to have to heal. Getting enough fermented foods so you enrich your microbiome, getting enough of all these different things so that minerals, all this, so that your body can heal. It's so much more important to focus on that rather than what to take out. And it's important to ditch the ultra-processed foods. Don't get me wrong, but
we can ditch only focus your on, processed
yeah.
foods. Okay.
Yeah. You can only focus on so much, right? Especially you got kids, you got work, everything. It's like, okay, I'm just going to focus on what are the nourishing things we need to get in. So those would be the main things. And fermented foods,
like what? I was amazed. I went to the Fermentation Fest a few years ago and found out so many foods are fermented. Mm-hmm. Chocolate,
yes.
Coffee,
yeah.
Pickles, what else? Bread, sourdough, bread,
yeah.
Even cheeses, right?
Yep, cheese is fermented.
Yogurt.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Fermentation is really, it's not just sauerkraut.
No, but
no.
Sauerkraut's great. But yeah, sauerkraut, kimchi, lacto-fermented pickles. So like you said, if they're on the store shelf that have in a can or a jar, they have been heated and aren't probiotic anymore. But kefir and yogurt, you know, those types of things that have probiotics in them. There's also, you know, things that are not fermented that have probiotics, which would be things like raw milk is probiotic but is not fermented, which I think is an incredibly healing food. But yeah, a balance of animal and plant foods I think is really important, and getting just a wide variety. And, you know, when we talk about eating things like grains or nuts, so those things that are seed foods, really making sure that we're preparing them in a way that so their body can digest them. They're very hard to digest. Plant
so
foods in general.
Sprouting is a good idea.
Sprouting or soaking.
Or soaking.
Like soaking things like rice or oats in water with a bit of like apple cider vinegar or yogurt in it. overnight before you cook them, or souring in things like making sourdough breads or crackers, or you can make sourdough just about anything baked. I do sourdough cookies. You know, there's all sorts of things.
Oh,
like that,
so I've been making crackers, which is really easy, and because I'm trying to avoid seeds. Seed oils mm-hmm. that are highly mm-hmm. processed, and almost all the processed crackers and any kind yes. of snack food has these seed oils.
Yes.
In them. So I've been making crackers at home, but I didn't think about soaking or fermenting before yeah. I make them. Mm-hmm. So they would just be much more beneficial if I
yeah.
did that.
So more easier to digest uh-huh. and you get more nutrients because uh-huh. it kind of, the process of soaking and souring and sprouting unlocks some of the nutrients that are kind of trapped in these seed
okay.
foods.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, in talking about seeds, you mentioned seed oils. That's certainly one of the main foods to avoid that I talk about. So those would be things like canola oil, safflower, sunflower, cottonseed, soybean, it's vegetable oil. Those types of things are a biggie in terms of like, where do I start? If I'm trying to get rid of processed foods, that would be a big place to start, would be getting rid of the seed oils and using traditional cooking fats instead. So butter or ghee, lard, which comes from pigs, tallow, which comes from cows typically. And if you're going to use plant-based oils, coconut oil would be probably the best. It's the most stable for cooking, but also olive oil and avocado oil, really high quality ones can be mm-hmm. used as well.
So that is one place you could start, is just don't buy those things anymore and replace them with the good oils.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just get rid of the canola oil and stuff like that.
And making things yourself, like you mentioned, I made crackers so that I avoid these oils because that's sometimes the only way. There's so many processed foods out there that have these oils or that have highly processed sugars or have artificial preservative colors. It's almost impossible to avoid if you're buying pre-made foods.
So, and it wouldn't be something you would add at home.
It's right.
You know, if you just make something at home, you're not going to put food coloring in and
right. Unless it's,
you know,
Christmas cookie decorating
or something. Christmas cookies.
Yeah.
And that's okay. That's okay. Red and green with me.
Right.
But, you know, I
bean
mean.
Bean spirulina. But
no, you're not adding those artificial ingredients yeah. when you make a cake yeah. or something.
And yeah, so learning to cook is the number one way probably food-wise to improve your health, is to really focus on learning mm-hmm. to cook. And you can start simple, mm-hmm. Being willing to put in that time, because there is going to be a cost. It will take you time, but there's a cost to everything. You know, mm-hmm. you're either going to pay in health
mm-hmm.
or you're going to pay in time or money. You know, there's right. there's a cost. There's nothing is free.
But I'm sure like making a broth, really, if you have a slow cooker,
mm-hmm.
you know, it doesn't take any more time. I mean, you just have to
no.
plan ahead a little bit. But I was thinking, a stew with stew meat that has no bones in it, that doesn't have the benefit that actually...
Well, you will get some. Because,
you'll get some.
Because the stew meat, but any cut of meat that is...
It's going to have some...
Yeah, it has collagen in it. Yeah, any
okay.
cut of meat that you would need to cook for a long time, the reason you have to cook it for a long time so it's not tough is that it has a lot of collagen.
Oh, I see.
And it's hard to... Mm-hmm. And it needs that long cooking to break down. So
even if something didn't have bones in it, it's
yeah.
still, if it's slow cooked, you would get the
yep.
collagen out.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's helpful. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
But yeah, a lot of this stuff, you know, as you learn to cook, you see that it takes time here and there, but it's not, you're not just constantly cooking.
Constant time. Like fermenting, you know, just run through how you ferment cabbage.
Yeah, so you take 20 minutes to ferment a half gallon of cabbage, and you have... or of sauerkraut, and you have this you know what I mean? You have this for months. So it doesn't have to be something that takes a long time. So basically you shred up cabbage like you're making coleslaw or something. You mix it with salt, and you kind of massage it and pound it all together to get it nice and juicy, to kind of release all the juices, pack it into a jar, and wait 2 weeks. So if you spend 20 minutes doing all that, of course, it might take you a little longer at first as you learn to chop or learn to do these things, but, you know, you can bust mm-hmm. out a batch of sauerkraut in 20 minutes and have ferments
uh-huh.
for your family for months, you know. So same with making broth. Like you said, you take 10 minutes to put some meat in the slow cooker. You could throw in some salt or herbs or whatever, but turn it on and let it sit. You know, it doesn't have to be a lot of active time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So learning to cook, you mentioned, you're asking about like, what are things we really need to do? So learning to cook and using these traditional foods, getting outside more often, moving our bodies more often. You know, we just don't have to move in our modern society. You could do everything from your couch, and you could have your job. You could get food delivered. You don't have, you know.
Yeah,
and our
wow.
bodies are designed to move a lot. So we have to kind of replace what is lost from modern society and moving.
I know that I have learned a lot just from yoga, and it's not fancy breathing or anything, but just breathing totally in and breathing totally out. And I go, I think I've been holding my breath for the last 2 hours, breathing very, very shallowly.
And that actually affects digestion, and, not just the nervous system. So when we shallow breathing is huge. Yes, so moving more of our body, moving more of the diaphragm, the lungs, not only if we're shallow breathing, it keeps our nervous system a little more in that fight or flight, because we're kind of shallow breathing or holding our breath. I do the same thing when I notice. I'm like, oh yeah, I just was holding my breath for how long? It doesn't signal our body to get into that rest and digest mode. And especially if we can more often nasal breathe, you know, gets our body more in that relaxation mode. Mentioning breath work. Oh yeah. So on the digestive piece, if we are doing a lot of shallow breathing and holding our breath, it actually can push the diaphragm muscle. So the muscles that kind of go between underneath the rib cage, they can be pushed up, and that can actually really exacerbate reflux.
Oh, so
it's pushing pushing up on the stomach, and can give us GERD and reflux symptoms. So breathing is a big part of it. Breathing and how we eat and slowing down is huge. If you are a type A person, anxiety riddled person and have gut issues, slowing down is just going to be a big part of it.
I have a book that said how the joy of the joy of cooking for one. Mm. And one of her suggestions is put out a nice placemat, a cloth napkin, set the table, have a candle. Do not eat standing up. Make a nice meal for yourself and sit down and treat yourself as company. And as I'm living alone now, I am practicing that. And it's lovely. Treat yourself like you're a guest. And make beauty is really important, isn't it? A flower, a plant, and a candle, and just, you know, don't jump up before you finished your last bite, you know?
Yeah, enjoyment's really important. If you can enjoy your food, enjoy your company, whether it's your own company or, you know, the company of others, and not have screens, and just slowing down.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I have just so much enjoyed talking with you, Laura, and the hour has sped by. And so I've been talking with Laura Poe Mathis. And name your business and how they can get in touch with you.
Yeah, my email is laurapoerd@gmail.com. And the course coming out, it's launching in a couple weeks, is called Rest, Digest, and Heal. So there's for more information, there's restdigestandheal.com. And I'm really excited.
Great. I just wish you one. I know you're going to have great success with that. And it's really good news that you're going to be able to share this with a much larger group of people and send people on the path to healing. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
So Laura Poe Mathis has been my guest. She lives in rural Reedstown, I guess you'd say, between Reedstown and Viola. And I'm Philothea Beeson, and you've been listening to Who's in the Kitchen. And I hope you'll tune in again next week.